This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit villageofbedfordpark.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03 on this Monday, the 10th of August. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us today on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Andy Dane in for Rob Hart. The WBBM Noon Business Hour is sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. Ready or not, pumpkin spice season is here. We'll take a look at why retailers are getting an early jump on fall. We'll cover that in our next segment. And the busy week ahead on Wall Street, including housing, inflation, and retail sales numbers, along with the backdrop of doubts over an agreement between the U.S. and Iran to fully reopen the Strait of Hormuz, as we now welcome in Andrew Bush, former Chief Market Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com. Andy, thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour. Lots to get to with you. I want to start things here on the geopolitical front. We're seeing oil now creeping above $80 a barrel. Obviously, you know, a lot of doubts and some misinformation, some confusion here in terms of a deal getting done with the Middle East. Where do you see things here, and what should consumers know?
Yeah, this situation is pretty intractable for the United States. We've gotten into something that we can't get out of. Iranians really hold the cards, and I don't see a good outcome here for either the oil markets or geopolitics, in the sense that the Iranians will likely remain in control of the Straits of Hormuz. And that generally means higher oil prices overall and higher oil prices and gasoline prices for U.S. citizens.
So how long do you see this? I mean, obviously, it's a tough situation, and we're not totally sure where it will go here. But how long do you see it all kind of taking to play out? And when may we see things maybe try to ease a bit, especially for those of us at the pump?
Yeah, I don't see it for a while until President Trump backs away from his demands of, you know, getting the nuclear material from Iran. I just don't see it as a negotiating position for the U.S. anymore. We've run the table to some extent on what military action can do. The Joint Chiefs of Staff chair has already been advising President Trump to find a way out. And I think longer term, what we're going to see here is a tariff coming from any oil that comes out of the Middle East. So it's probably going to add $5 to $10 per barrel, higher than where it should be.
So, Andy, flipping to the economic front here, we mentioned key inflation data expected to come out this week. What are you going to be keeping an eye on?
We're going to see if we can continue to see improvement here. We have seen some over the last couple of months. It's just really a question of, you know, how does oil play into this? How does energy play into it? It's been up and down, obviously, since the president has been negotiating with Iran, or trying to. And that hurts the overall headline number. The core data will probably show a little bit of easing, nothing great, and certainly nothing heading back down to the 2% level that the Fed wants us to get. So that means interest rates are basically on hold.
And Andy, one last question here for you before we let you go. You mentioned kind of how the Fed plays in all this. I want to get your take as well on retail sales, kind of the health of the consumer, expecting to get some new data on that Friday. What will you kind of be looking for when that number gets released?
Yeah, the U.S. consumer has been very resilient. So I'm looking for a number of like plus 0.2 to plus 0.5. It's hard to say. It's a little volatile. But overall, spending in the United States continues to hold up. And of course, with AI being, you know, close to a third of economic growth in the United States, that continues unabated. So there's some good things that are going on underneath the economy. All of the noise around the Straits of Hormuz is not helpful, and really makes consumers worried and voters worried over the rate of inflation heading into the midterms.
A lot of great insight there, as always. Thanks so much. That is Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com. Coming up, the calendar says summer, but those shelves say fall. We look at why pumpkin spice season is already making its debut.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Yeah, it might be hard to believe, but pumpkin spice season is already here. Retailers are turning the fall favorite into a late summer tradition and big seasonal business. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is R.J. Hotovin, head of analytical research at foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. R.J., thanks for joining us. All right, temperatures still close to 90, and yet I guess if you're walking around Target or your local grocery store, you're going to start seeing some of these pumpkin spice offerings. All right, it feels kind of odd to me. Why is pumpkin spice season starting so early?
Yeah, it does feel like it gets earlier and earlier every year. But in reality, there's really two reasons why we're seeing it so early. One is that August is generally a quieter month for retail sales. And so it's a way to kind of, you know, create an event for August. And second, probably more importantly, consumers respond. We see Starbucks and other players in the coffee space have some of their strongest days of the year when they introduce pumpkin spice latte. So if consumers weren't responding to it, I think we'd see a different reaction. But honestly, that's why we're seeing it earlier and earlier at this point.
All right. So people are responding to it. I'm not among them just yet. But you mentioned then that it clearly, right, it's working. There's a reason that we're seeing, you know, stores start to roll these out earlier and earlier. In that same kind of, you know, conversation there, when we talk about competition now, you know, I know when people used to always think of, I always used to at least, you know, equivalent, you know, kind of connect pumpkin spice with Starbucks. And now it's, you're really seeing it in stores, whether that's, you know, the pumpkin spice, you know, actually coffee, candles, things like that. Are retailers now competing with each other to kind of be the first to roll out these products and maybe try to find new ways to incorporate pumpkin spice?
Yeah, I think they are. I think at the end of the day, Starbucks still owns this holiday. And, you know, the increase we're seeing on the actual launch date are actually getting more pronounced. We're seeing north of 25% lift compared to that same day that they've launched. But obviously, there are other players in the space who are trying to capitalize on this trend. And I think it's, you know, you're right. They're innovating. They're coming up with new fall-themed items to go along with it, both at restaurants and groceries. So I think a lot of other players are jumping on this. But at the end of the day, it really is Starbucks holiday to own, and others are just playing keep up at this point.
Yeah, you know, and I'm curious, too. You know, I don't want to be a hypocrite because I'm the person that loves, you know, seeing Christmas stuff getting put out, you know, before Halloween. So, you know, I can understand maybe the hypocrisy there, but you know, just seeing the pumpkin stuff when it's still toasty out there and everything. You know, I'm curious just if this is something that obviously the world of retail is seeing and maybe tapping into more. I mean, obviously the pumpkin spice is a phenomenon, but could this lead to, you know, maybe we roll out Halloween stuff earlier as well? Maybe you start to see the Christmas stuff creeping in even more. Kind of where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing that across the board. I mean, we're seeing, you know, Halloween merchandise brought out as early as July, the Summerween phenomenon, so-called. We're seeing Christmas purchases being done earlier and earlier. It's not just Black Friday anymore. It's really a Black Friday quarter, if nothing else, because we have seen a lot of those purchases pulled forward into October. And I think a lot of retailers are just trying to be the first to capitalize on these things and make sure that when consumers are making a purchase, they're making it through that particular retailer on that online site. It's really become critical in that battle to get things out earlier and earlier. And so it may be a trend we continue to see, although I don't know how much earlier we can get on a few of these holidays.
I might be ready to stock up for New Year's Eve after my shift today just to get ahead of it while we're talking about all this. Really great stuff as always. Thanks so much. That is R.J. Hotovin, head of analytical research at foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. Coming up, Chicago home prices are reaching new heights. We'll look at where the prices are surging and what is fueling the red hot market.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
And up next, Chicago area home prices hitting record highs, with some neighborhoods and suburbs seeing especially sharp increases during the first half of the year. Joining us now to discuss is Drew Wishover, founder and owner of Inspired Title Group here in Chicago. Drew, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour today. Let's start with the home prices driving higher here. What's behind that increase here in the Chicago area?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Andy. Happy Monday. There's a few things that are really taking place right now. The inventory is really the biggest driver, you know, the lack of it. There's just not enough desirable homes that are, you know, that are out there for people to look for them. You know, as soon as a well-priced home is coming up on the market, multiple buyers are competing against those things, and it's just pushing prices higher right now. We're also seeing that the new construction people are, you know, they're at higher price points than what they used to be. So that kind of raises that ceiling for people as well. So it's really creating some of these, you know, affordability challenges right now.
Drew, any particular areas where we're seeing some of the biggest price hikes?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it's not just limited to, you know, one part of the Chicagoland area. You know, we're seeing it up in the northern suburbs as well as, you know, the Chicagoland area. And now we've seen it kind of migrating into to some of the southern areas as well, like Blue Island. We've got Lake Bluff in northern Cook County is really starting to, you know, really I think it's like 45% it was up. So these prices are just all over the board because people are looking for areas where schools are good. They can commute to and from work easily. The, you know, community is great. These are areas that are, you know, driving people into those spaces.
So you mentioned the rising prices and obviously an important note there, too. I mean, the fact that schools factor into that as well. Are we seeing maybe bidding wars kind of coming back here as a result of just the sheer competition in the market?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially in the certain areas that we just, you know, kind of briefly mentioned there, I wouldn't say that every home is suddenly going to be getting, you know, 10, 12 offers and things because condition, location, all of that stuff is still really, you know, mattering right now. But, it, you know, when you take low inventory and then a high desirable property, people are going to go after that stuff really quickly.
Andrew, one last quick one here before we let you go. Obviously, want to touch on affordability. Obviously, still an issue here. What needs to change for the whole dynamic and kind of the market itself to improve here?
The big three here: interest rates, inventory, and then home prices. I mean, those are the big three things that are driving the affordability issues that they are. Because interest rates are up, inventory is down. And then the home prices are up. So two of the three are you know, it impacting on a price piece. But the inventory being down is just not allowing the folks to, you know, to see things different. And stuff is just kind of sitting out there.
Well, certainly the housing market is something that we will be keeping an eye on and hoping for some relief here. Thanks so much. As always, that's Drew Wishover, founder, owner of Inspired Title Group in Chicago. Oh, still ahead, giving kids an allowance is the easy part. Figuring out the rules can be a little tougher.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm Andy Dane in for Rob Hart. New Business Hour is sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. Stocks trading lower so far today. With us now to discuss is Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk. Michael, thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour today. All right, stocks a little changed following last week's strong performance. What's kind of driving the market right now in your eyes?
Well, the usual things, which is fear and greed. You know, right now they're kind of mixed because, you know, you've got a lot of fear of these AI companies kind of getting beyond their skis and with too much debt. And then you've got the greed part, whereas, you know, there is a lot of growth in AI and, you know, that could continue. So it's kind of like a tug of war between the doomsday guys and the demand is never going to end guys. And right now today it's kind of, it's offsetting each other. So we got a pretty much a flat market.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned kind of the tug of war there. I'm also curious, you know, we had that jobs report on Friday, which kind of altered expectations on interest rates. I'm curious what in your eyes investors kind of took away from those numbers and how that may be factoring in here to start the week.
Yeah, well, the thing is the labor markets are still showing that you know, it's a fairly healthy economy overall. And so, you know, right now the fear in the market is that the Fed could raise rates more so than lower them. So, you know, it's that's definitely a headwind, but the Fed hasn't done anything yet, and you know, I'm of the belief that if they do anything, it might be a quarter point, one raise and done, but I don't even think they're going to do that. But a lot of people are getting nervous that the Fed is going to get more aggressive and go after inflation stronger than what we believe, and that's, I think, a headwind, as I said, to the stock market. So we've been kind of we had a little push over at 7,500. We're now at 7,750, and it's been kind of sitting here for a few days, not knowing which way to go from here. So I think the Fed will give it a direction at some point, and also more macro numbers as they come out.
You know, obviously a lot of eyes as well on the Middle East right now and just kind of the geopolitical, you know, implications here. Curious how much kind of a lack of movement on a potential deal here with Iran is concerning you financially.
Well, you know, it's getting to the point where there's a lot of war fatigue, I think, among investors, and me included. You know, this has gone on a long time, and every time you think it's over, there's another problem. I think that investors need to get used to that and become numb to it, because it's I don't think it's going away anytime soon. This might be a never-ending war. I hope I'm wrong with that, but I think you have to be prepared that this is going to last a lot longer than people think. And you're going to have oil prices fluctuating based on what's going on over there. And just focus on the corporate fundamentals, buy good companies, short bad ones, and just get back to basics of investing. And instead of trying to figure out, are we done with this war or not? Because that's just a fool's game right now. I would just look at what's working, a lot of big banks are working well. We like copper miners just for the electricity demands that's out there. So things like that, they'll work regardless of what happens in Iran and the Strait of Hormuz. So I would tell investors to focus on the corporate fundamentals and try to tune out the war news as much as possible.
You talk about kind of recalibrating focus here. I also want to ask you, Michael, you know, is there, you mentioned kind of the banks and just kind of getting back to the kind of the corporate flow here. Is there maybe a narrative on the stock market that's emerging that we're not talking about yet that maybe, you know, a week or so from now is a bigger story?
Yeah, we've been saying this on Twitter, and you can follow me, MikePal10, on Twitter or on here. You know, we've been trying to tell people, you know, look away from the AI bets as much, because I think it's, you know, you got a lot of real smart people on both sides of that trade. I just don't think there's edge there. I think you can buy big money center banks like JP Morgan and Citigroup. You can buy copper miners, which is COPX. We like Rocket Labs as our high beta stock. We think it's going to start going back up, and it has. We like Target. So these are names that are not dependent on the AI trade. And that's basically some of our biggest holdings. And we like China too. So, you know, those are names you can buy right here and not have to worry about whether the AI game is going to work or not. I mean, you know, I think that's the way to play things right now.
Well, that's a great insight and advice there, as always. Thanks so much. That's Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk. Well, reading, writing, and financial literacy. Why, back to school season may be the perfect time to start kids on an allowance. That's coming up.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, back to school means back to routines, and it could be the perfect time to give kids another lesson about how to manage money. That often starts with allowances. And joining us now to discuss is Shane Gornick, financial advisor at Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle, online at preparemyretirement.com. Shane, thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour. Really important topic here with back to school just around the corner. I remember having an allowance when I was younger. It was a pretty exciting part of childhood. Didn't really think about the financial and, you know, kind of planning implications here. But what is the right age to maybe start your kids on an allowance?
Yeah, we're often finding a lot of times right around 10 years old. Could be 12 or 13 years old, depending on your child and their level of maturity. But I think around the 10 to 12 years old age is usually a pretty good starting point.
All right. If you're going with that age, and obviously it depends on the child, but is there a money amount that parents should really be realistically giving their kids, you know, and trying to find a way to kind of teach them, you know, to divide the money between the spending and the saving?
Exactly. And that's a great question. So the thing is you want to give them enough so that there's actually something to budget. So what we find is, as a starting point, something around maybe $15 to $20 per week. Now, when we look at that, as kind of structuring it into two parts. So having that amount be maybe like the base amount that they get every week, but then also factoring it in where they have the ability to, over the course of the week, to do some extra things that allow them to earn extra allowance, just to kind of give them a little bit of extra motivation to try to work harder to gain more money in return.
So you mentioned the motivation, and I'm curious here, you know, as someone who wasn't very smart with my money when I was younger, not sure I've gotten much better at it as an adult, but you talk about kind of the learning lessons here as well. You know, I remember blowing a lot of my allowance on video games, you know, and things like that maybe weren't smart in the saving process. When it comes to parenting, should you let your kids maybe make some mistakes when it comes to that allowance money? Or do you really want to maybe more kind of step in and make sure that you're avoiding issues like that?
I think you can do both just to an extent. And so first of all, it's completely normal for them to make mistakes because it's not something that's taught in school. So it's something that you have to learn from your parents or learn the hard way or both. You want to provide some structure, but at the same time, if they blow through their entire allowance on Tuesday and they've still got more week left over, not bailing them out might not be fun for them and it might cause some drama at home, but it can help them learn the hard way that, wait a minute, the next time I'm going to spend all of my allowance money, all that I've accumulated before my next check, my next allowance comes up, it's a painful situation, and that helps. It's much easier to learn that lesson at age 12 than at age 20 or 30.
Yeah, very, very, very well said. You know, Shane, one last question for you here, just kind of big picture. You mentioned there's a lot, I would think, here with the allowance, the allowance kind of approach. But what is the biggest money lesson in your eyes parents should be trying to teach their kids before they get older?
Biggest lesson is to allow them to have the experience of using money when the stakes are not that high, and also being able to provide structure along the way, because a lot of times they don't know what they don't know. And so we know about budgeting, and at least we should, about how to save and how to use our money for regular everyday items and for saving for future items, but they don't. And so having an approach of letting them learn the hard way, but at the same time, helping them learn what, you know, the everyday stuff about budgeting and giving them ideas for things they might want to save for to help provide them motivation so that they're not just saving for the sake of saving. They're saving for something that maybe requires a few weeks of allowance as opposed to just one.
A lot of parents probably taking notes out there. Great insight. Thanks so much. That is Shane Gornick, financial advisor at Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle, online at preparemyretirement.com. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. And still to come, we have a pair of investment ideas from a money pro.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
And it is Stock Picker Monday. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the website UpsideStocks.com. Chuck, good afternoon. Thanks for being here on the Noon Business Hour today. All right, so two picks coming from your UpsideStocks.com list. Where are we going with our first stock pick of the day?
The first pick is Comfort Systems. The symbol is FIX. The stock trades for a hair under $1,700 a share. And as an aside, I know both of these stocks have high per-share prices, but most brokerage firms now, if you do buying online, for example, you can buy both full and fractional shares. So you can invest as little as $50 or $100 to buy a fractional share of these stocks. So don't let the high per-share price tag scare you. Comfort Systems is down about 18% from its 52-week high. And that's kind of in line with what we saw a lot of the price declines in a lot of the AI-related stocks in the month of July. They have since come back a little bit. Comfort Systems is a major player in that space in terms of the data center build-out. The company does mechanical and electrical work at data centers. So it's both providing power as well as heat removal and ventilation and air conditioning systems, which are very crucial to data centers. Earnings have been very strong. Revenue was up 50% in the latest quarter. Earnings were up 92%. Earnings estimate trends have been moving sharply higher, and that's because the company has just been trashing earnings estimates. In the last four quarters, they beat the analyst earnings estimate by 31%, 38%, 54%, and 20%. So this is a company where Wall Street is continuing to play catch-up on the true worth of this company. We like the stock. Our clients own the stock, and it's Comfort Systems. FIX trades for about $1,700 a share.
All right. So FIX to start. And Chuck, your second pick of the day.
The second pick is kind of in the same industry. It's EMCOR. The symbol is EME, trades for $818 per share, and they too are involved in mechanicals and power into the data center. And it's been a very successful business for them. Earnings estimates for the company are trending higher over the last 30 days. The company's earnings beats have gotten bigger. And in fact, in the most recent quarter, they beat analyst estimates by 25% in their latest earnings period. The stock is down about 14% from its 52-week high. So it is a stock that is down double digits, so you wouldn't be buying it at the top. And the company has been raising its revenue and earnings guidance for the year. We like this stock as well, and is a stock that our clients and our company own, and that's EMCOR, symbol EME, and it trades for about $818 a share.
All right, so EME, and of course FIX, that's Comfort Systems USA, are two stock picks today. Thanks so much, Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the website UpsideStocks.com. A reminder that if you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.